So far, I haven't heard my echo. Now I have. That seems weird. You get used to it, and then it seems you feel naked when it's not there. You sound naked when it's not. I don't know what that sounds like, but that's what it's like. So, thank you, Micah, for last week's message about milestones in our Christian walk. In case you didn't recall, that's what it was about. It was about things that we should recognize to show us that we're going in the right path, the path that we should be on, and that would be the path that shows us growing and maturing in our faith, not staying as infants. So that was a little bit of review from Micah's message last week, not staying as infants. So thanks again. And again, I want to put out the call. If anyone is interested in leading a message, then let me know and we can figure that out. I know Floyd volunteered a little bit ago for this coming week. So it is good for us to once in a while get outside of what our normal box is and doing something that's a little bit stretching your comfort. So a little bit about what I've been doing lately. I've been repairing an old junky house, in case you didn't know what that's about. And I'm trying to complete and finish the phases that I have permits for on this old junky house. And one of the projects is repairing a foundation that holds up part of the house. That's probably important that would be good, or the house would collapse if that part isn't there. So last fall, I had a footing or a hole dug, and I poured a footing and started to put blocks up until the weather got too cold to do cement work, because pouring a footing and putting up blocks is dealing with cement, and it has to dry and cure and all that before the weather freezes it, and then it would break apart. So it has to do with the quality. So this past week, I restarted the work to try to get it completed by my birthday, or Terry's birthday. I think it's the 5th is when my permit expires, and I think that's Terry's birthday, right? Mine's the 6th, so I get one day rest for my birthday after the permit expires. And you know, they only give you 1 year to get it done. No, I'm not a procrastinator. I just moved like a snail. So anyway, my first day, I have to turn it on. It is on. Huh? Oh, okay. This is two pictures. This picture is the left picture, and this is the right picture. This is a divider. So it's not the same picture, even though it looks confusing. So that's the project I'm working on. Notice the junky house. It's got a rotten board right there. So my first day back at it, I told Micah I got 6 bricks in the wall. And he didn't seem too impressed. What I got was his great response. Great. I got 6 blocks done, Micah. Great. And with that kind of a response, maybe he thought it might take another year to get it done. I'm not sure. So there's the footing that I poured. I mixed all that by hand and formed it and poured it last fall. And I put up most of those blocks last fall. And these are the 6 bricks that I got in. I got that one, that one, that one, that one, and that one, and this one. This one is on the very corner of the house. So I got 6 bricks done, and he wasn't very impressed. No, I wanted to inform you that yesterday I got 11 more, so I was on a roll. And these are the 11. That one, 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 and these 3. Do you know how hard it is to put those 3 in? You have to crawl through this hole to get the stuff on the inside, the mortar on the inside. On the outside, it's easy to get up there and put that mortar in. Even on top of there's mortar. in between there. How can you get those in there and get the mortar in there? You have to crawl in that hole and drag all your stuff in there and squeeze it into the little crack when you put the bricks together. That's what I did. That's why I only got 11 done. So, at the end of yesterday's work, after I did the amazing 11 blocks worth, I checked my supply. I counted the blocks that I needed left. They're pretty easy to count because you can. The next course would have the end, the end, the end, the end in the middle of the block below. So I counted them all up, and it turns out that I'm a few bricks short. So when I came home, I told Jennifer that I was a few bricks short, and she completely agreed. So that's what I've been doing these last few days. Okay, you can shut that one off. Or if I hit it again, will it go black? It's already black. That's okay. So, have any one of you followed the story of the death of the queen? No? A little bit? You can't have a phone and not know that it's going on because it's got messages all the time. The former queen of the UK, or the United Kingdom. The UK is England, Scotland, Wales, and Northern Ireland. This one. So this is what the UK is. This spot right here goes around back there again. So there's Scotland. Did you know that my great-grandfather was Scottish descent, Lindsay? He's from Scotland, somewhere over there. There's a Lindsay clan over there. I was wondering why it wasn't all of Ireland, but it's not. Maybe the IRA has something to do with it. But regular Ireland is not part of the UK, but Northern Ireland is. And Wales, I thought that was something that ate Jonah, but come to find out it's a country. They spelled it wrong. And then there's England, and then there's Scotland. So those are what the countries are that make up the UK. And I wanted a map that had a little bit of Europe in there, if that's what this is, because France is here. So you can kind of get an idea where it is in the world. You have France, the Netherlands, which I thought wasn't there, but it is. It's funny how when you look at a map, you learn stuff. But that's where it's situated, and there's water all around. It seems to be a bunch of islands. That total area there is about 94,000 square miles. The U.S., do you know how many square miles there are in the U.S.? 3.5 million. I think that's quite a bit bigger than 94,000. The state of Oregon in the U.S. is the state that has the closest land size as the U.K. And it has about 96,000 square miles. Where is Oregon? Isn't it right like down 64? The state of Oregon, not the town of Oregon. So these are the capitals of the states. There goes the problem. Oregon is up here. Salem, Oregon is the capital. So that little spot of the U.S. is a little bit bigger than U.K. So you can just gives you an idea about, it's just a reference to show, you know, how that compares to what we're used to here in the U.S. So the population of Oregon is 4.1 million people, around 4.1 million. And it's a little bit bigger than UK. The population of UK is about 67 million. So the people are packed in quite a bit tighter than they are in Oregon. Oregon is full of mountains. That's probably why they can't get there. You can't get there from here because they're like the sides of mountains and you can only do so much with them. So the people are packed in quite a bit there. And again, it's just a visual to let you know how UK compares to something that we're used to. But there are other states that the Queen, remember the Queen died? That the Queen was in charge of, not just UK. It won't advance. How about the next slide? There's the queen. That picture was taken, or else that portrait was painted about 2 years before I was born, 1958. That's her official portrait. That was the queen that died, what she looked like in 1958. And these, I thought, were very interesting. See these 2022s over here? Those are the kingdoms and other commonwealths, they call them, not kingdoms, but commonwealths or states that the queen was in charge of. There were 32 other places besides, or 35, the UK, that she was queen of. And you can see some names on there that I was kind of like, Fiji, I didn't know that. The Bahamas, I didn't know that. There are all kinds of them on there. Jamaica, did you know that the queen was in charge of Jamaica? I didn't know that. I knew Australia and Canada and New Zealand and some of South Africa. I don't, maybe proper South Africa, the country. And some of them are no longer under the reign of the queen or king or the throne of UK. It's changed names a few times. I didn't know Kenya was either. But there's a list of other ones that aren't part of the UK that the queen was in charge of or queen of. Okay, that's good for that. So her reign was 70 years, 214 days. The longest British monarch in history. There are monarchs that were longer, or maybe only one. But from Britain, the longest monarch, and the longest of any female head of state in history of any country, which I think is kind of unique or notable anyway. And the best part of all that I heard about this queen is that in all those years, 70 years, 214 days, there was never any scandal recorded. An honest politician for 70 years, or more than 70 years? That doesn't seem possible in this country anyway. It's not possible in this country. It's very commendable, especially with someone that has power. She had power all those years. She had many parts of her kingdom or queendom, however you want to put it, and still no scandal. And also with all this news that's been going on about it, I've learned some new lingo, like queuing. I don't know if you guys picked up on the queuing or not. Did you hear the word queuing in your internet, whatever coverage of things that come out? And that's what it's called if you want to view the casket that's at Westminster Hall. You have to queue, which I know. I have a great list of songs queued up. I've heard that on the radio before. They have a line of songs that they're going to play in order, and queued up means that they're in line, that they're that's what it means, to be in line. So I learned that it's more than just queuing up songs or you're right on cue, but it's what you do to pay your respects to a king or a queen in Britain, that is. You get in line and wait your turn to pay your respect. And I saw some reports of up to 6 miles long of line for people to view her casket. And some people waited as long as 24 hours in line just to pass by. That's just to see her casket, which was closed. Do any of you know how many people went through that line? Do you know? Probably a million? Maybe. I don't know. I never heard. Has anybody heard about what the prospective or projected viewing for tomorrow's funeral will be? Her funeral's tomorrow. She's been on display until tomorrow, and then she gets a funeral. It's probably going to be a quarter of the world's population, more than a billion. That seems like a lot. I think there's 4 billion in the world, am I right? Yeah, it's around 4 billion or 4.5 billion. It's a lot of people. So then all the jobs change with the death of the queen. The internet has informed me that there are jobs that people have. They're not titles. So like prince and all that is not a title. It's a job. It has things attached to it that you're supposed to do. So Prince Charles is now King Charles III. And William is now Prince of Wales, heir apparent. So that's his job. Being heir apparent is part of a job. And his wife, Kate, is now the Princess of Wales. And everyone moves up a notch because the queen died. So everyone's one closer to the throne, one notch closer to the throne. And I don't want to talk about Harry and Meghan because I'm not sure about them. But they seem to be in the news all the time, too. My phone was going off with those guys all the time. And did you know Anthony Buzzard? Did you know that he's royalty in that realm? He goes to one of the churches in Atlanta. And he says that if 3,000 of the right people died, he would be the king. So I think he was telling that as kind of a jest, because he is a sir. So sir is part of the royalty. That's part of in line to the throne, if you're a sir or a duke or anything like that. So when Jennifer and I were talking about these different positions of the royals, a difference as to why there is so much admiration with the queen compared to things like here, I don't think we understand all the way, that the queen was admired by a lot of people, and a lot of people went to see her and pay their respects. Even famous people would stand in that line for countless hours just to get their chance to go by the casket. But if it's different than here, because compared to here in the U.S. of A person has citizenship, and you're part of you as a citizen are part of a state or a government or a commonwealth. And so your allegiance is to a government, not to a person. Where in the UK, or in UK, there is no citizenship. The population are loyal subjects to the queen or the king, whoever is the ruler. So the difference is there's one ruler, and it's by blood. So her ancestors will take over. Her son is king now. Her grandson will be king if all that works out and he survives his father. He's heir apparent. William is heir apparent. So their ruler is everybody's ruler. The whole nation and all those other ones that are still under the control of the king. So everybody is a subject or a subordinate to the king. Not so much here. It's more like the people here admonish the rulers more than admire the rulers. So I never really thought about that difference until we were talking about that yesterday or the day before, that the difference between all the hoopla that they have going over there, it's because they have one ruler and everyone is a part of that government. It's not a divided government like we have here. So that brings me to the message part. The kingdom that Jesus is king over also should have loyal subjects, just like the Queen of England had or the King of England has now. There are loyal subjects involved. If there's a king, there has to be subjects. In order to have a kingdom, there must be subjects. So when that kingdom actually begins is kind of vague to people, the kingdom that Jesus brings or the kingdom that Jesus is king over. A kingdom needs a king and subjects. So if you don't have one of those, you don't really have a kingdom. If you don't have a king or you don't have subjects, you can be a king, you can say, but if you don't have subjects, there's no kingdom. So is that going on now or is it in the future? Is Jesus king now or will he be later? In the last few weeks and talking with different people about different aspects of religion and the Bible and what does it mean and when does this happen and when did that happen or has it happened? I've had my theology challenged. I've heard of a foreign idea recently, and that is that the kingdom that Jesus is ruler of is a spiritual one that's going on now. I was told that Jesus' kingdom is going on now, and that it's really a spiritual realm, not so much a physical realm. Instead of what I've learned so far by reading and studying what the Bible says, I haven't found that in the Bible. What I've found so far is that Jesus will return and set up a kingdom. So the queen had a realm that had pieces scattered around the world. You saw the UK where that is, and it's very local, not that big. In fact, one of our smaller states is bigger than what they had for the realm as far as the proper realm of UK. But there are other places, Australia and New Zealand and some of the bigger areas that have more land. Daniel 2 describes the kingdom of this world and the kingdoms of the world or the kingdom that will be coming in chapter 2. I'm going to go there and read Daniel 2:35. It's kind of like a comparison to, we're right now in the news is this other kingdom that's changing. This one is about Jesus' kingdom. Daniel 2:35 says, "Then the iron, the clay, the bronze, the silver," this is about the image that Nebuchadnezzar dreamed about, this image made of these different materials. "The iron, the clay, the bronze, the silver, and the gold were all crushed at the same time and became like chaff from the summer threshing floors, and the wind carried them away so that not a trace of them was found. But the stone that struck the statue became a great mountain and filled the whole earth." So I believe that this is the kingdom that Jesus brings back with him. And in verse 44 and 45, it expands it a little bit. It says, "In the days of those kings, the God of heaven will set up a kingdom which will never be destroyed." That's a big promise. Set up a kingdom that will never be destroyed. And that kingdom will not be left for another people. It will crush and put an end to all these kingdoms, but itself will endure forever. So this kingdom that God promises that Jesus will be king over will crush all the kingdoms of the world, which UK would be one of, and all the other realms that are in the world. You hear of Russia lately, you hear of the US, you hear of Ukraine, those are in the news a lot. You hear of all the other countries there are. The world is full of countries, but this one will crush all of those kingdoms and not be left for another people, and it will endure forever. "Inasmuch as you saw the stone that was cut out of the mountain without hands, and it crushed the iron, the bronze, and the clay, and the silver, and the gold, the great God has made known to the king what will take place in the future, so the dream is true and trustworthy in its interpretation." So Daniel interpreted that dream that Nebuchadnezzar had about this image, and he didn't understand. And it turns out that Daniel could explain to him what it meant, what God meant when Nebuchadnezzar had that dream. And his part of that statue was the head of gold, Nebuchadnezzar's kingdom. And then it went down and formed into a man. These different kingdoms would be in different parts of the body, and the stone that comes out and destroys it all and fills the whole earth. So that kingdom that Jesus has starts with a stone and grows and fills the whole earth. So this kingdom will be a worldwide kingdom, not one like Elizabeth had that is pieces here and there and put together. And also, her realm was passed on to her son, King Charles III now. This other one endures forever. I believe that that's Jesus' kingdom, and it's actual, and it fills the whole earth, just like the stone grows and becomes a mountain and fills the whole earth. There's nothing else left on the earth except that mountain. 1 Corinthians 15 is also a good place to get a glimpse of Christ's kingdom. 1 Corinthians 15. Verses 22 through 28 is what I want to read. And something about this reading, before I read it, it gives us a good glimpse of Christ's kingdom, but there is an amount of implied information that is derived from the text. So when you read the text, it doesn't spell out and say this is the beginning or this is that. When you read the result, it makes you know that something had to happen for this to happen. And now I'll read the text. So some of the information is implied in this text. 1 Corinthians 15, 20 through to 28. And Paul wrote this, and it says, "For as in Adam all die, so also in Christ will all be made alive, but each in his own order. Christ, the firstfruits, after that, those who are Christ at his coming." So it does mention his coming. "Then comes the end, when he hands over the kingdom to God the God and Father, when he abolished all rule and authority and power." So, because he hands over a kingdom means he has to have had a kingdom, right? If he hands it over, he had one. So it's implied that when Jesus returns, his kingdom begins. Because when it's done, he hands it over to God. "So he must reign until he puts all enemies under his feet, and the last enemy is death." So those are things that are implied. To me, it implies that Christ's return begins the kingdom, and the text shows some of the accomplishments and goals that the course of the kingdom produce. So when Christ comes back in his kingdom, it's not like everything is automatic at the beginning and everything is like it's done. It's a progression, it's a course, like a golf course has 18 holes. You don't go to the golf course and when you swing the golf club, all 18 holes are accomplished. It's a progression. Things happen. You have to go to hole one. You have to go to hole two. There may be obstacles. There are trees. There are lakes. There are ponds. There are sand traps. The whole course is a course. You have to go through the whole course to get to the end. Just like the kingdom of God or Jesus' kingdom, it starts out and ends differently. At the beginning, it's probably much like what this world is now. And then slowly, as he changes things and brings new things in, it changes by the time it gets to the end. But by the time the end comes, there are some accomplishments that will be made, and this text shows that. All enemies will be under his feet. I'm sure at the beginning they are not. But over the course of time, they will be. Death will be abolished. I'm sure at the beginning it's not abolished. In fact, in Isaiah, it talks about in the kingdom or during the kingdom, a child will die at 100 years old. So it will be considered a young person if they only live to be 100. Now, very few people even live to be 100. But in the kingdom, if a person dies at 100, he'll be considered a child. So death wouldn't be accomplished or abolished by that point. But by the end of the kingdom, death will be abolished. So it's a course that must run. And these are some of the goals that the kingdom accomplish as it progresses on. So this doesn't seem like a spiritual event to me. What I mean by that is not physical. It seems like that it's an actual, Jesus will be on the actual earth, actually walking, and he will have actual subjects that are material people with real nations, not something that's spiritual or something that's a metaphor. It seems like it's an actual, the descriptions seem very real to me. Like I said, I was challenged by someone saying that the kingdom is a spiritual thing, not an actual thing. Also, a spiritual resurrection was suggested at the same time they were suggesting the spiritual kingdom. And my Bible says that I'm going to fight for that one because resurrection to me is the key to everything. Because death is the curse for man, if you don't have resurrection, everything is pointless. That's what it tells us in 1 Corinthians 15. That if we don't have resurrection, then everything is in vain. Our religion, everything is in vain if we're not resurrected. Death is there. I mean, we see it all the time. We have cemeteries everywhere. Death is real. Resurrection also is real. It's not a spiritual awakening. It's an actual resurrection. 1 Corinthians 15 and verse 42 talks about that one. 42 and 43 and 44. We'll go to 46. And I'll read it to you. It says, so also is the resurrection of the dead. Now try to imagine this as a spiritual event instead of an actual event. Try to imagine it that way. I can't. So also is the resurrection of the dead. It is sown a perishable body. That means that it is put in the ground as something that will rot. It is raised an imperishable body. That means it's brought back out to something that cannot rot. In verse 43, it is sown in dishonor, it is raised in glory. It is sown in weakness, it is raised in power. It is sown a natural body, it is raised a spiritual body. If there is a natural body, there is also a spiritual body. It is also written, I would only wanted to go to 44, that's as far as I wanted to go. So maybe the person who gave me this information was thinking that, okay, it makes sense because it says that first comes the natural, then comes the spiritual. Maybe that's the spiritual resurrection because we already have a body, so maybe the spiritual part would be spiritual, immaterial is the word that I want to use for spiritual in that spot. But in verse 42, it points out that we have spiritual bodies, not spiritual. What's the opposite of a body?
A
nobody? What did you say the opposite was?
A dead body.
A dead body? That's still a body.
A carcass.
A carcass? I think it would be an immaterial. I mean, you have a physical body or you have a ghost? I'm not sure. But it says that we will have spiritual bodies. A body is something that's physical. It's not something that's immaterial. So I think that this resurrection is a literal bringing back and standing again. That's what resurrect means, to stand again. Nobody, that's kind of a funny word, isn't it? A body or a nobody. Is that really the opposite? Well, anyway, with the Queen's death, I thought it would be a good opportunity to share some of God's word about His coming kingdom. God's coming kingdom, who Jesus is the King of. The kingdom that Jesus brings. I know that there's some argument about what the kingdom of God is and when it happens sometimes, but not very often. But here are some conditions and improvements for His kingdom. We've talked a little bit about the realm of Elizabeth II, if that's what her name is. These are some improvements and conditions for Jesus' kingdom. In Job, it says in chapter 14, verse 15, He will call and I will answer you. Or you will call and I will answer you. That's what Job is talking about when after he's dead. He's saying to God that you will call and I will answer you. So people are resurrected for this kingdom that Jesus brings. There's a resurrection that happens. That's not in any other kingdom. The author of Hebrews writes in verse 40, chapter 11, you might be familiar with it. Floyd probably is. Because God has provided something better for us, this is a quote, because God has provided something better for us so that apart from us, they would not be made perfect. Now that's what it says after this long list of people that did famous things in Hebrews 11. Sarah's in there, Abraham's in there, Barak is in there. Name some other guys that are in there. The guy that got cut in half in a log, Isaiah. He's mentioned in there. All these people through all these different times in history will all be at the same time rewarded with this kingdom. Apart from us, they won't be made perfect. So this kingdom, no one is left behind. The whole kingdom is always together. That would be cool. To see those people, to see our parents, our grandparents, all those people that we resurrected, all at the same time, all of us together. Not a scattered kingdom where a king is replaced, a queen is replaced. It's one that goes on forever and ever. We already talked about Daniel's description. It will fill the whole earth. We already went over that a little bit. Ezekiel saw a vision in Ezekiel 34:25. It says, I will make a covenant of peace with them and eliminate harmful beasts from the land so that they may live securely in the wilderness and sleep in the woods. Did you know that that phrase is in the Bible, sleep in the woods? It is. It's in Ezekiel 34. So there will be peace and safety there. I never really thought about it. I have slept in the woods. Did anybody sleep in the woods before? Alone? One time I slept in the woods alone. I was a little kid. I don't know what I was thinking because I was probably should have been scared. But when I woke up in the morning, I was on my back in my sleeping bag and there was this giant cow face right in my face. So I opened my eyes to see a cow face and it was just sniffing me. I don't know. I remember that though. I was afraid it might step on me, but it didn't. So in Jesus' kingdom, there will be peace and safety, even safety from the wild animals. So the lions won't tend to want to eat you, or the cougars not tend to want to maul you, or the bears. You can pet them. You might be able to roll around with them, I'm not sure. Probably might not want to, but you might want to. But there's peace and safety in that kingdom, which does not exist now. In Isaiah's version, in his version of the kingdom, or his vision that he saw of the kingdom, in chapter 2, verse 4, it says, and he will judge between the nations and will render decisions for many peoples. This is talking about the king. He's going to judge the nations. So there will still be nations, at the beginning of the kingdom anyway. Different nations or different kinds of people together. And he will render decisions for the many people, and they will hammer their swords into plowshares and their spears into pruning hooks. A nation will not lift up a sword against another nation or against nation, and never again will they learn war. So when Jesus' kingdom comes, it will bring perfect peace. The nations won't fight. Ukraine and Russia won't be at each other's throats in their backyards, lobbing missiles back and forth. The weapons will be made into plows, and other weapons will be made into farm implements. So a different kind of peace that we're not used to or haven't seen will occur. Something that his kingdom will accomplish. Also in Isaiah 51:3, it says that he will comfort all her waste places. In her wilderness, he will make like Eden. So the earth itself will be brought back into perfection. Will that happen at the beginning of the kingdom? I doubt it. It's going to take the whole time to get the earth in that kind of a condition, I'm sure. It'll be probably one of the last things that would be accomplished. But it's something that the kingdom that Jesus brings will accomplish. How does all this begin? Or when does it all begin? Has it begun? In Isaiah 2:17 through 21, it says, it begins like this. The day he arises to make the earth tremble. If you can imagine what that might mean. What's it mean when the earth trembles? Did you know what a tremble is? This is trembling. It might be an earthquake. It all begins when there's an earthquake. And Zechariah agrees in chapter 14, verse 4, it says, in that day his feet will stand on the Mount of Olives, is talking about that king, which is Jesus. His feet will stand on the Mount of Olives, which is in front of Jerusalem on the east, and the Mount of Olives will be split in the middle from east to west by a very large valley. So the mountain will split, and half of it will move toward the north, and the other half toward the south. It will all begin with an earthquake. Yeah. Let's close with song number